fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Routy's beagle Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, an ice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff, Mike can hardly steer.
Hey, watch out for the stern!
When he oopers in a pontoon boat, fishing for Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with a guy.
Well, howdy doody, boys and girls. We are here. We are there. We are everywhere. Yes, yes, I say yes. Can you say fish? Yes, fish. I am saying fish. Okay, as in fish and drinks, and that's Robert over there. That's me over here. One of us is somewhere. The other is another place. And good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Frank.
All right, take two. We had the whole system crash on us here. We're dealing with take two. So we are trying again, and we are going to get into hooks. We are going to get into fish. We've got our top five coming out for you. All kinds of stuff going on. All right, Robert, let's take a little different vein and see if we can't change our vein, change our luck. What's your top five of the week here?
Oh, geez, where to begin? I mean, the water temperature came up so much, then we got this front come through, kind of messed things up. My top five, probably going to be bonnet heads would be my first choice, just because they're schooling up out there in their pre-spawning kind of situation, little aggregates out there. You come through these patches and of areas, and there's 20 to 100 of them on a flat. So you're finding fish over right there on the skating rink, right just around Alligator Creek. I got a good report yesterday of about 100, 150 fish on that whole flat there.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And then still some good numbers all along the intercoastal.
How are the bonnet sharks up by Lemon Bay? Anything up there?
Well, so I was just talking about with the intercoastal.
No, you were talking about the intercoastal. I'm talking about Lemon Bay.
Well, I was getting to that
direction. Well, you were getting there? Well, come on. Snap it up here. Get there, boy.
It's part of the intercoastal.
Okay.
Above the Tom Adams Ridge heading up towards Indian Mounds Park.
Right.
All that area along there on those grass flats, there's groups of anywhere from 2 to 25. I'm not hearing of giant schools of them, but in an
25
area,
25 is enough.
Yeah, in 50 yards or 100 yards, it's a pretty fair amount of fish. And they're primarily catching them on shrimp. A couple guys are getting frustrated because they aren't catching them on anything at all, but they have breeding on their mind. So you're going to run into these little groups of fish that just don't care about anything. You stand a better chance of finding the more scattered out groups of fish in order to get them to feed a little bit better.
Well, you know, guys get frustrated with that, but you know, this is spawning time, and I would like them to think back. They're 18, 20 years old, you know, or 21 years old, I guess, nowadays, because when I was young, it was 18. But now you're 21 years old, you're out at the club, and you finally meet this woman, and you guys are getting along so good, and everything, you're having such a great time, and you're dancing, and you're having fun, and everything starts to proceed along, and are you really thinking about a sandwich? You would have been?
No.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. But yet they expect the fish to want a sandwich while they're in the middle of, you know, these wonderful creatures meeting each other.
Exactly. You know, so the guys will just have to get over it and try to move on and find a different smaller groups of fish. But that the light tackle fight of those fish is absolutely amazing. And I know we're getting into that time of spring break where you get a lot of younger family members coming down from up north. Those fish, to them, it's a shark. It doesn't matter.
It's a hammerhead.
You know, it's
a hammerhead.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's a bonnet. It doesn't matter if it's a shovel nose. It's a hammerhead.
Yeah.
Because it is one of the hammerhead sharks.
By the time they get home, it'll be 6 feet long.
Yep.
You know, it's still, you know, it's a shark, and they just have all these.
The one thing about it is they don't like to eat fish very much.
No.
They would their main preferred diet here in the harbor is shrimp.
Yeah.
So don't, okay, you're gonna, you heard the sharks up there in Lemon Bay and on the intercoastal, so don't go out and grab mullet and stingray. Well, stingray would probably work okay, but
not too much.
Not really. It's pretty much, if you want to catch these bonnet sharks, get some shrimp with you. And you're going to want to get the shrimp. You're going to want to make sure all that works.
And just a bobber, small, short free leader. Line,
and most of us are still using a mono leader, so that way we're fishing for trout, redfish, and if you have and bonnet sharks all at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, that's a good thing in Lemon Bay. Now, you can take that all the way down through till Sanibel. There's bonnet sharks all around Cape Hayes, east side of the harbor, west side of the harbor. They're all over the place. Fish number two, I'm going to call ladyfish. There's a lot of ladyfish around right now.
Well, all those glass minnows moved into the harbor. It's not real surprising how excited the ladyfish have gotten.
Right.
You know, you've got those glass minnows following that incoming tide down there through Boca Grande. A lot of life has showed up in the harbor. We got schools of thread fins, baby thread fins, not tarpon thread fins. And then some small white bait out there too. So that turns things on really good, which is what we needed, because we've been talking about that all winter long, about the lack of glass minnows and basically food.
Right. We started talking about that in November. And by February, we had the harbor loaded up with a lot of little tiny bait. Everything's been working out really good. A lot of ladyfish. And really, if they're there, you take lures and throw them, jigs and throw them, throw out a shrimp under a bobber, free line a shrimp, whatever you want to do. The only way I would say I probably wouldn't try to catch ladyfish and to have a lot of numbers is with a sinker.
Right.
They like it drifting down, they like it coming up, they like it floating, but they're not big bottom pickers. They will on occasion, but for the vast majority, they want it in the water, not laying on the bottom.
Yeah, they're more of a suspended feeder.
All right, so your next fish, what's going on in the next fish?
The next fish, I'll go with Spanish mackerel, just because they're following that incoming tide, chasing that bait in. It's warmed up water, you know, so I don't know why they're not staying in the harbor, because there's so much food around, but the numbers seem to be incoming tide all the way up to Cape Hayes, and then as it
think of them as like a band of mariachis. They are going everywhere, they are playing everywhere, mariachi music for everybody. Yeehaw! They go all over the place. Okay,
nice. I don't understand why they're not staying in the harbor though. There's just scattered ones everywhere, but not any numbers. Get past Cape Hayes, hit Boca Grande, and out along the beaches. Pretty good numbers. Find the bait, and you will find the Spanish mixed in, especially with those ladyfish.
Now, my big thing is I usually troll for Spanish mackerel until I hit them. I like trolling a Storm Twitch on one side. I'll put a Rapala 08 on the other side. You can use a little Yozuri. But most of all, just something with a lip on it so it's not twisting my line up. I'm not going to troll a spoon. And watch for disturbances in the harbor, whether it's schools of bait, whether it's birds diving, whatever it would happen to be. I'm going to look for some kind of indicators, put my lures out, troll. Once I hit them, I just stop and start fishing. I'd rather go and see if there's fish there before, and they will readily hit any trolling lines. If you don't have a lot of rod holders in a boat, just like say you got a few people on a boat. I pick two people to start off with. They get the first hit. Cast lures out each side of the boat, and okay, anyway, let's get to where they are. Okay, enough. All right. Best places for Spanish mackerel, I would say out along the beaches. How deep of water can you cast from them from shore?
No, I'm not hearing too many of them moving in real close to shore. Occasionally right there in Boca Grande Pass, and I heard of a couple of fish moving in close to the beach down there by Captiva. But I don't know if they're really within casting range from shore.
All right. So how far out would you say you got to go? I'm going to say, really, you got to be a couple hundred yards offshore.
Yeah.
You know, because they're outside that hump that builds up. You got the beach and then kind of a trough and then a hump that builds up there. You got to be outside of that. And then all the way on out to, what, 30 miles out, something like that?
About 15 is where I'm kind of hearing, yeah.
All right. Charlotte Harbor, marker 2, marker 5, a little bit at the reef.
Yeah.
getting up, any of them, a few up in Lemon Bay, right in the ICW channel.
Right.
And that's going to hold through all the way down. Now, once you get down around Captiva...
You know where they are catching them occasionally from the shores up there at the jetties. They seem to be moving in and out of there with some regularity. Not consistent, but definitely be ready for them.
So your best bet to catch Spanish mackerels at the jetties.
If you're standing from shore, absolutely.
I would say possible at Anger Pier and Englewood off the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility, and possible at Placita Trestle.
Right.
But other than that, it's going to be pretty tough to get them from land. But scattered out throughout the harbor, and a mark or two up here at this end. Usually they're just to the west a couple hundred yards. If you go over to marker one, there's a possibility, but I'd probably hit the reef. And they like going around the reef, a lot of little stuff that lives in and amongst that reef. And so, and then going down to Cape Hayes and going out between the sandbar and marker five, great ambush spot for Spanish mackerel. All right, what's your number four on the list?
Tarpon. I'm going to go with tarpon.
Are you going to go with tarpon? Are you going with tarpon?
Nah, I'm going to go with tarpon. Because most of them are on the smaller side. I haven't heard of the... There's been some big ones around in Boca Grande and along the ICW, especially down in Pine Island area and even down to Sanibel. But they're resident fish, and they're very scattered. So they're not balled up in real tight groups yet. But the juvenile tarpon that I'm hearing about from some of the canals, like... what's that called? I think it's Buck Creek up there in Lemon Bay. Mm-hmm. Heard of some juvenile tarpon in there that were cooperating. I had a guy in here that got some on a fly the other day, 20 pounders. And then a lot over in PGI, they're acting up real good. And then also up there around Shell Creek and even up above the Navigator on the main part of the river, I'm having a lot of guys seeing fish but not hooking so many up there.
Actually, they're hooking them at the power lines just north of Harbor Heights where it widens way out.
Okay.
There's a grouping of power lines that go across the river there, and seeing some real nice tarpon hook up, catfish tails, and at a varied assortment. I mean, you could use shrimp, catfish tails if you're using shrimp. Even with the catfish tails, it seems to be about 4 or 5 feet below a bobber seems to be the best thing. So... kind of anchoring the boat up, make sure when you anchor the boat you're tying a loop knot on your anchor line and just looping it over a cleat and have a buoy on that anchor line, because if you hook something that's 100 pounds, most of them you're going to be able to stay at anchor and land them. But if you hook a big one, you're going to have to throw that anchor line overboard. You're not going to have time to bring the anchor in, so right. Be prepared to throw the anchor line overboard with a buoy on it. Could be a couple of jugs, a couple of crab trap buoys. I don't use one buoy on my anchor line.
No, I want mine to stand out.
Well, if you're out there and there's 50 crab traps in the area, how do you tell which one was your anchor line?
Exactly.
So I do something to mark it so it's distinctive. And one of the customers came in and he added a heavier bleach bottle to his, and he wrote on it, "My anchor, don't touch. Bill."
Nice.
"Don't touch my anchor, Bill. Be back." Because believe it or not, people have gone off and then come back and their anchor was gone.
Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? What's happening to fishermen? It's sad.
All right. It is.
Anyway, but anchors can be worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
I know I've got one very inexpensive anchor I leave on the boat. But if I know I'm going to do a bunch of fishing, I've got a $300 or $350 anchor I put on the boat. It's my all-aluminum one.
Yeah.
But I keep that one locked up because that one's expensive.
Yeah.
And it's nice because it's light, but I don't leave it on the boat. I've got a very cheap anchor on the boat. It's a little bent up. And if I'm not really planning on using anchor, I've got that one on there. No galvanized, dull, beat up. If you want to steal that, okay.
More power to you.
Yeah, it's not worth stealing. So, but it sits out in the open in my boat, so I don't leave anything good sitting out in the open. All right, getting back to it, tarpon fishing up the river, variety of baits. If you can catch some live ladyfish, good bet. I would probably say you want them under 12 inches, though, 10 to 12 inches at this point, because those fish aren't real big. catfish.
Catfish are going to be my first choice up there.
One way to do it that people don't realize is you can take a pair of diagonal cutters, we call them dikes or cutters for wire, and clip the dorsal fin and two pec fins off, and then I'll usually mess up the tail on a little bit and throw that out about 4 to 6 foot under a bobber, and a smaller live catfish is actually very good bait.
Oh yeah.
And I prefer just throwing the chunks of tail meat out, and I free line them off the boat, but you know, just about anything. Tarpon will pick up off the bottom almost as readily as they'll pick up in front of, you know, in the water column under bobbers. But I think if it's kind of where they can find it, it's easier. Restaurants on the main drag always do a little better than restaurants off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Because people can see it. You know, oh, look, there's a restaurant there. All right. You know, they don't put McDonald's on the second road behind the shopping center.
No.
You know, because if you see it, you're more likely to get it. And it's kind of the same thing with a fish. You know, sometimes hanging it 4 to 5 feet below a bobber, which is really too long to cast, you can't throw it away from the boat. So I just set it down next to the boat, open the bail, put the rod in the rod holder, and then I just pull some line, letting the current take it away from the boat. And I'll just let it keep floating out there, floating out there. We got some of those new big bobbers that are pretty awesome. The only thing I'm not thrilled with is they have a swivel top and bottom. I'm just not sure how strong those swivels are going to be.
Yeah, I don't know either.
They look like they're about 60-pound, 80-pound swivels, yeah, which you can put a lot of pressure to some of these fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to get somewhere that the exact same float but has a line-through capability on it. I think that would be a little better. You're getting more decorative. I use a
balloon.
Take your headphones off, you've got rings again.
I've had those.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not used to you being quite so decorative. You got pretty plain when, you know, you were shaving your head and your head.
It's my midlife crisis. I'm going to buy a convertible next.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You're blind. You can't drive a convertible.
Sounded good in theory, didn't it?
You're just going to park it in your driveway.
Yeah.
You know, just
sit out there.
Sit out the car. And
let the wind blow through my hair.
Put the fan next to the car and have it blowing through.
My one hair will just blow through nicely.
Yes. Well, I think you got about three left. You know, they can blow them across, back, you know. Oh, Robert. All right. Anyway. All right. Let's see. Tarpon. Out in the middle of the harbor. Are they starting to visit the deep holes in the harbor yet?
Not at all. Not that I have heard of.
Now, my best bet would be off the sandbar down by Cape Hayes.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Where's your best bet?
For bigger fish, I'm going to probably look in the passes, to be honest.
Going out to Boca Grande, Captiva, yeah. Redfish, yeah. Spunarasa?
I'm going to probably go to Boca, Captiva, and then I would probably run all the way down to off the beach, off of Sanibel, off of Knapp's Point.
Gotcha. So out in the Gulf along the beach, they're already picking up some tarpon out there.
A few. Most of them are resident fish that have moved out of the intercoastal and the canals and even out of the Caloosahatchee River.
And when I'm fishingfranks.com, weather and tides, I'm taking the first Gulf water temp button, scrolling down until I can hit St. Pete, which is 70 degrees. Naples is 72.5. Key West is not reporting at the moment. Pensacola's down to 66, about 3 degrees above average, supposed to be 63. We're 2 degrees above average in St. Pete. It's supposed to be 68. Naples is a half a degree above at 72.5. It's supposed to be, well, it's a degree and a half above. It's supposed to be 71. But with Naples at 72, St. Pete at 70, this is just about when those big tarpon should come up. They're only a 2-day swim from, you know, where they winter over to Charlotte Harbor, where they're going to spawn. I mean, if they're down just south of the Keys in the Caribbean, hanging out in the Gulf Stream and there where the water's warmer, they can easily shift back up to be in Port Charlotte within 2 days. If they swim leisurely, if they swim fast, they can do it in 1 day.
Right.
So they're not that far away. Now, some of our fish go all the way over to Belize. They go up to Louisiana, Texas. They
Brazil.
Brazil.
And even South Africa.
So some of our tarpon go all the way across to South Africa. Now, people are going to say it sounds a little far-fetched. But it's a fish. Now, what does a fish have to do besides swim?
Eat and breed.
Okay, other than that, so, you know, if it takes him a while to cross the Atlantic, does the fish really care? He's still swimming.
Yeah, there's no fences out there. I mean, those fish go everywhere. I mean, they've shown that, well, I mean, look at the great white shark that they tagged way up off of Montauk, and every year she comes into the Gulf and heads towards Louisiana. Every year for the last, what, 5 years. And then they just had a male that they tagged recently off of South Carolina that popped off of Everglades City, very close to shore, not really? 50 miles out. This shark came within 20 miles. You know, so...
And I mean, that's a great white, right?
Yeah.
So, and they always said, oh, we don't have great whites in the Gulf of Mexico, but...
Oh, yeah, we do.
Now they're proving that we have great white sharks in the Gulf of Mexico, and they are coming by... But they do prefer that deeper water, the actual green water stuff.
Yeah, they're usually out 75 to 125 miles minimum.
Right. But now we're finding out that some of them are actually coming very close to shore.
Well, over the years, back in the day when Novak was doing the tagging of the bluefin tuna over there out the Carolinas, they've started proving that some of those fish actually come into the Gulf of Mexico. Granted, they're 150 to 250 miles out. But bluefin have been coming into the Gulf of Mexico for they're not sure how long.
If they come in now, they've been coming in forever.
Yeah, pretty much. They just never knew it.
Well, you know, and it's a fact. We know more about the surface of the moon than we do about what goes on in the oceans.
Yeah.
I was working the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. I was in Alabama and I was in Louisiana. And working in those states and watching what went on, and then they sprayed that stuff on the oil to congeal it and make it sink. Because once it's 1 foot, 2 foot below the surface, it's as good as gone, because if you don't see it with a TV camera, it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And they didn't want to clean it up. The administration we had at that time just wanted it to get out of sight. Quicker it's out of sight, the better it is. Let's dump more poison in the water and just move it out of sight. And kind of goes along with the theme that we really don't know what happens underwater.
Right.
If you're going to the moon or Mars, we've got things and we go around, we've got cameras taking pictures, we got, you know, all this stuff going on. But it's actually a more hostile environment the deeper you go underwater.
Yeah.
People don't realize how inhospitable the water can be, you know. And I'm listening on the news and I'm hearing this idiot. And he's talking about, well, with, you know, the climate change and the sea level rise and all this. I'm like, sea level rise? What is wrong with these people? It's risen 7 inches in the last 200 or 300 years.
Yeah.
And it hasn't gotten any higher, boys and girls. It hasn't changed how much is going in. Now, there is theoretically the possibility it could jump up a little bit. But until there is literally... no sea level rise. Miami is sinking. It is not that the water's coming up to it. It's going down to meet the water. You put tons upon tons upon tons, hundreds of millions of tons of concrete on limestone that is slowly eroding away.
And suck the water out from underneath that limestone.
And then suck the water out from underneath there. And Houston has sunk over 8 feet since they started building it. It went down. That's why Houston floods.
Mm-hmm.
Houston would have never flooded 100 years ago.
Nope.
But over the last 100 years, Houston has lowered 8 feet. There's parts of California that are 30 feet down. And they keep talking about, well, the sea level's coming up. Maybe. It might have come up an inch or a quarter of an inch since 1900. Maybe.
Maybe.
But let's say it came up 3 inches. Let's say in 200 years it came up 7 inches. So it came up 3.5 inches in the last 100 years. Is that making the city flood? I don't think so. 3.5 inches, that's just what the wind's going to push in and out. What is happening is most of these cities are sinking. Venice, Italy has sunk way further than the waters come up.
Yeah.
And because I've seen pictures from the 1400s, people painted, you know, where you see a gondola up and you got steps going up and, you know, the guy standing in the boat isn't even as tall as
the steps.
Know, yeah, the steps going up. His head is 1 foot or 2 down. Figure he's probably like 5 foot tall. You know, people back then, they weren't very tall. So, you know, it's probably 7 feet up. And now the water's lapping the top of the steps. Mm-hmm. And it would appear that the water came up. But literally, the city is sinking. The pilings are going down into the ground. The ground below it is giving away to the weight of all that stone on top of it. It was never meant to have that weight on it. And I don't know why that came, but it got me when I'm hearing a government official spewing stuff like the sea level rise. Really? Give me a break. Read a book, for God's sakes, you know? Read a government study.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah. I shouldn't get frustrated over that, but I do, because I don't like misinformation. Right. If sea level rise was real, we would know it. I mean, we live on the water.
Yeah.
We would see it. And it is real. Every once in a while, when the wind comes out of the west, the water comes way up. The wind comes out of the east, the water goes way down. And I've seen the markers out there. I know where they are. And they were put in almost 100 years ago. So, anyway. Anyway, sorry. Propaganda stuff kills me. Now, getting back into the fish, let's go on to the number five. That was number four. What's number five?
Snook.
Snook fishing.
Yep.
Now, all the way down to number five, even though this is snook season.
Yeah.
I'm hearing lots of shorts, but I'm not hearing a lot of slots.
That's why I'm keeping it at number five.
Is that why it's number yeah. five? Okay, snook's number five because...
The slot limit sucks and is completely stupid, speaking of politics. Plus, the fact is that just hearing of so many small, what we call buck snook, just little guys,
right.
you know, 15 to 24 inches, there's a lot of them. I mean, you want to bend a rod and have a great time, there's plenty of smaller fish to be had.
Around the piers, around mm-hmm. the docks, in the canals, almost every fishing pier right now has snook underneath them.
Yeah.
Whether it's Gilcrest, Anger Pier, the bridge in Englewood, the boat docks next to any boat ramp, those docks have fish on snook underneath them. They're there. There's
yeah.
a lot of snook around all these. Pick any, I would say if you went up and down the canal, I would say maybe 6 out of 10 people's docks behind their houses have at least one snook on them. At least.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even up in the rivers, you know, there's quite a few snook. Most of them are smaller with a few really, really big ones.
Now,
you know what's funny is this year, I think it's always been known, but I think the secret kind of got out because it's always been kind of downplayed immensely, but this year I've had a lot more people fishing the Myakka River, and I mean the upper Myakka River, like from 41 up, and catching some really quality snook. And I know Florida Sportsman last month ran a really well-written article on snook fishing in the Myakka, and it all talked about that area, but even prior to that article coming out, I was getting some pretty good reports from up there.
Well, everything old is new again.
Absolutely.
And when I was learning to snook fish, we would take 1 ounce rattle traps upriver. Now, I mean, when I say upriver, up like go up to the 761 boat ramp and head towards Arcadia.
Right.
And we would throw those rattle traps, 3/4 to 1 ounce rattle traps up by the bank, let them go down till they're pretty much by the bottom, and then just slowly reel them back up, cast them out. And you got to have something that dives deep. So a storm swim bait might be pretty good because
yeah.
it can go right down to the bottom, less likely to get hung up than a rattle trap. But there is so many big fish up there. But you're using 4 to 6 inch, I would say 6 inch lures, 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah, I mean, when I was first learning how to snook fish here, a guy was teaching me it up there because you know, when I first moved here, I landscaped with my uncle, so we worked up there in Venice, and the guy was telling me about the Myakka River and how he fished it and stuff like that. So I bought a, is it the 16 series bomber?
Yeah,
the big one.
Mm-hmm.
You sold me one of those, and I went up there and used to fish underneath that bridge there, 41 where it crosses
right,
over the Myakka.
Right in Northport.
There used to be a restaurant there.
And you used to have a boat ramp there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And fish right there underneath off that seawall there. And used to catch some pretty nice snook there. And this guy used to troll, but he said, you just stand underneath this bridge and cast that big bomber and work it nice and easy. He said, if you cast it upstream, you gotta reel a little bit faster. But he said, cast downstream. And a lot of times if you're up underneath the bridge, cast just a little ways down, and just let it sit there in the current. If you got a stronger current humping through there, you said just let that bomber sit there and just work. Whether it's 2 inches below the surface or 2 feet below the surface, depending on the current, he said you'll get whacked. He said it'll scare the crap out of you because you'll be there for 5 minutes or 15 minutes doing nothing but feeling your lure vibrate, and then all of a sudden your rod gets jerked out of your hand.
Mm-hmm. You know, now that works at Elgin, it works at Placida, it works up on any bridge up by Venice, all the way down to Ponarasa. This technique is around a bridge. It does not have to be at that spot.
No.
Now, one of the things, if you're just moving down from up north and you have some old deep diving lures from lakes that you fished, either lake trout or whatever it is.
Even some of your small-bodied bass crankbaits.
Yeah, they go down 15 feet. You know, you want something with a big lip on it. And anchor up off a bridge or a pier or anything where you've got a good strong current moving. And let your lure go back until it gets by the object. Lock the bail up and just let it, just hold it. And the current will work that lure on down. Now, what will happen, sometimes they'll go too deep, so you got to make something a little shallower because the current will get ripping and it'll go down. If it's not vibrating, it's actually stuck in the bottom.
Right.
So you got to use a different one. You got to use a little common sense with this because you got to feel the vibration of that lure, and you're just letting the current work it. It's going down, 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 boom, 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 and it's just sitting down there making a tremendous amount of noise. And that will annoy a fish. It really, and if you were really annoyed with something, you know, somebody's, you know, person in the other room's got the radio up too loud, you would take your fingers and turn down the volume. Well, if you didn't have fingers, you grab it with your mouth and you still twist the volume down.
Sure.
So if a fish is annoyed at something, he can't grab it with his hands and swat it. He's going to bite it. And there's your opportunity.
Yep. And it's fun. You know, it's just, it's an amazing different way to do things. The other way is just a bucktail. Just slowly jig a bucktail. And a lot of times you can actually just not vertical jig it because you're not straight up and down, but you can lift that, you know, with a hard, tall sweep of your rod, lift that 2 to 4 feet up off the bottom and let it slowly fall back to the bottom again, and then just hop it back up, and it's going to get pulled away from you as it's sinking, and then bring it up and it comes towards you, and then as you let that slack, it's going to pull down with the current and go back away from you. So a lot of times you're not moving it but maybe a couple inches if you're lucky towards you each time.
If you lift your rod correctly, if you holding your rod and you pull it sideways, you're pulling the lure to you. If you let the tip go straight up, you might be pulling it up and back, but you're getting it up, letting the current drift it back as it drops down, so it will not come as far forward. If your rod's off to the side and you try and do that, you're just pulling it forward. Yeah. What we're talking about is if your rod is in your right hand, do not let it get past your right ear. Keep it outside of your right ear. If it's in your left hand, keep it outside of your left ear. Lifting the rod straight up and letting it drop back down. That's going to accomplish what Robert's talking about. You can't have the rod coming over, and most people want to hold it. If it's in the right hand, it angles off past the left side of their head. You got to get that rod straighter in order to make that work.
Yep.
All right. Getting into snook fishing, walking a shrimp along the piers is still one of the best ways to catch snook.
Oh, absolutely.
I take a heavy jig head, like a hookup jig head, and I like pinks, I like bright colors, but I want a 1/2 ounce, 3/8 ounce. This is not an 1/8 ounce or a 1/16 ounce thing. This is a heavy weight. You want to keep your line straight up and down. It's okay to use a 1/2 ounce, 3/4 ounce, 1 ounce jig head, but I want at least 3/8 or a 1/2 ounce. And I tie it to my line. I've got about 3 feet of leader on. I put the line-to-line knot, and I double my braid or double my monofilament to make it twice as thick. So when I tie it to my leader, I got a lot more power. Because when you hook up, the whole fight is going to happen in about a 3 to 5 foot radius. If he goes 3 to 5 feet to the right, he's going to wrap a piling. Goes 3 to 5 feet to the left, he wraps a piling. You've got to pull up and hold. So what I do is I tie the jig head on, I put a shrimp, and I go through the bottom of the shrimp's head out the top so that the point of the hook parallels the horn of the shrimp. and I want, I usually use a fairly short shank jig head. I want that shrimp pretty close to the head of the jig head. I don't want that shrimp back away from the jig head. I want the jig head to look like part of the shrimp, you know, like it's got, maybe it's a chunk of food it's grabbing and pushing around. I walk out in the pier, and as soon as I get about 10 inches to a foot of water, I drop my shrimp with on the jig head straight down. The shrimp head is up against the jig head. The body's trailing back. I let the shrimp hit the bottom, close my bail. I've got a very tight drag. I set it almost to hate. I pretty much set it to hate.
Right.
I don't really want to be able to pull any line off the reel. And then I walk forward holding my arm off the side of the bridge, because all I've done is lift the rod tip up about 6 inches. So I get 10 inches to a foot of water, put my arm over the rail, let the bait hit the bottom, close the bail, take the slack out of the line, lift my tip about 6 inches, and then I walk forward. But as I walk forward, you know how your shoes got kind of an angle where the arch of your foot is? That's as big a step as I'm taking. I put 1 foot halfway up on the other one, and then the next step is a half a step. I'm literally using baby steps. No flip-flops, no cowboy boots, no hard-soled shoes. And flip-flops go katak, 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 katak every time you walk. And you're telling fish, hey, I'm up here trying to get you.
Yeah.
So a good pair of tennis shoes, deck shoes, anything with a soft sole, and you take half steps. And about every third step, I just bob my rod up and down. Now, every 10 feet, I'll go along, and it takes me quite a while to go 10 feet. And then I open my bail, let the bait hit the bottom, close my bail, take the slack out, lift my tip up about 6 inches, and I'm doing that all the way out the pier, all the way to the end. I go around the end of the pier, and I start coming back down the other side. Now, I'm always doing the right side first because I'm right-handed.
All right.
If you're left-handed, start on the left side of the pier, because that's where your rod's going to be, in your left hand. If you hold the rod in your left hand, you start on the left side of the pier, and you go out, and you come back down the right side, and you keep going around. Most of your hits are going to be on the side where the tide is coming from.
Right.
But what happens if you get the dumb one that doesn't know what he's supposed to do?
Right.
And he's the one I want anyway. So if he's looking the wrong way, he's obviously not as bright as the other ones, and he's much more likely to hit the hook.
Yeah.
You know, so I always go both sides. You're much more likely to get the hit on the side of the pier where the current's coming from.
Right, because it's pulling your bait up into the structure, and they're facing into the current, waiting for food to get swept to them, because they are an ambush predator.
And so they want to smell what's coming at them.
Well, also the smell, the sight, everything else, but also they also sit like next to those pilings and behind those pilings a little bit to get out of that current where it eddies a little bit and helps them expel less energy so they can use it for grabbing the food as it's coming to them.
Right. If you've ever seen a rock in a river and the current's flowing by, right behind that rock is a very calm spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's an eddy. And that calm spot, you can sit there and pretty much motionless. You don't have to keep moving to stay equal with the current. Because if you got a 2-mile-an-hour current, a fish has to swim 2 miles an hour just to stay in place. Otherwise, he'd be swept backwards. So that's what we're trying to get at. These fish want to lay behind these pilings. Now, what happens is, as that current's coming towards them, it's bringing the smell from your bait back to the fish while he's laying behind that piling. So they're laying there, the bait goes by, and that smell wafts around it. That's why you don't want to be going too fast, because they're usually going to smell it before they see it.
Correct.
So I put a little bit of cover-up smell on my leader and on my jig head. The shrimp already smells like a shrimp.
Right.
But once you handle that jig head and the hook and even the shrimp, it's putting your smell towards the fish. And people say, well, there's not enough smell on there to matter. But a dog follows you around just by where a few skin cells fall off.
Right.
I mean, you're literally, you can't see it when your friend's sitting next to you, but part of his skin is falling on the floor while we talk. You know, I don't know how many millions of skin cells have fallen off since we started this show, but, you know, with the rate of the pace of the show, it's probably several million. But that's what you're up against. You're not up against what humans smell. You're up against what dogs smell.
Yeah.
So as you go by that piling, the smell wafts around that piling, and then the bait goes on, and they'll come out and hit it. But if it doesn't smell right, they're going to go out, look at it, turn around, go right back underneath that pier. So you're going to make sure it doesn't smell like a human. Make sure... I like the Stark King coffee smell. I like coffee. I'm sure they do, too. I mean, I think if Snook had the option, they'd stop in the morning for a coffee. I think any creature would stop in the morning and have coffee if it could, except a Robert.
No.
You don't like coffee.
No. I need to learn how to drink it, though, because it'd be a heck of a lot better for me than this garbage.
Yeah, that Mountain Dew just doesn't have the same health benefits. I always say, in one hand, that fumes coming off of that, that's the cause, and the coffee, in the other hand, is the cure.
Right.
There's the cause, here's the cure. In your part, you got the cause and the cause.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and I'm the one who's sick, so who guess doesn't work.
I got another 20 years. I'll be with you.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope you're in much better shape than I am. All right, anyway, getting back into it. So you walk that shrimp along, and it is absolutely an amazing experience. All of a sudden, this fish hits. The water explodes. I've been standing on docks that were 4 to 6 feet off the water, and by the time the fight was over with the snook, I'm literally have water dripping down my face. My hair soaked, my shirt soaked. You know, my back is nice and dry, but you know, the front of me is just soaking wet from all the splashing and frothing. And then you finally get the fish up, and it's a riot. It's really good, and it works. It just catches fish.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't require really much of any special equipment. You just got to be able to get to a pier and understand, if you throw a piece of bait out, I've seen people wait 2 hours waiting for a bite.
Yeah.
And never think anything of it. But if they walk 20 feet and they don't get a snook, oh, this doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny how that works.
No.
Yeah. I will say one thing that I do when I do dock, you know, pier fishing for snook, I do like to use my 7.5 or my 8 foot rod for that. More so than my 7 foot rod, because when I get hit, I'm trying to pull him away from the pilings, and I can actually lean over the railing and get that extra extension with my rod to keep him from going underneath it as easily. Still the same action rod. I just have that little extra 6 inches to a foot more
to hold him out away from the piling, just to keep him from wrapping a piling.
Yeah, you taught me that probably. Crap, I was still in high school.
Yes.
You know, because you were teaching me about Calcutta poles and explaining me, because I never knew anything about Calcutta poles when I came out here visiting from Arizona. You showed me the first Calcutta pole. I had seen them out on the pier, but I stopped in here to ask about them. And you explained it to me, but you said you can get the kind of the same effect like walking a shrimp. Back then, it was a salty dog,
right,
on one of those triangle-shaped jig heads. And you said you can get basically the same effect by using a little bit longer rod. And that's always kind of stuck with me, and it's worked.
Yeah. I every once in a while I get right about something. Let's see. So glad I found that button that got pushed. There was one button down here and one piece of equipment. Out of all these buttons and everything else, we had one that wasn't working. All right. So anyway, it's just little happy moments I get when I can actually figure out what the problem was.
And one thing, I will throw this in for snook fishing off the bridges. Make sure you have a bridge net. Bridge net's really important for getting those fish up, landed safely, and let loose back in the water. If it's an undersized fish, don't get mad and throw it off the pier back into the water. It's nice to take it, put it back in the net, drop it back down in the water. And you never know if it's going to be a legal size fish or not, so using one of those bridge gaffs or a treble hook to get those fish up, technically you're breaking the law and you're taking possession of that, plus you're just blatantly killing that fish.
Yeah, hooks, I don't know too many people still doing that stuff.
Not as much anymore, but we always hear about it at snook time. Snook time and shark time, we always hear about it enough.
It's $30 for a bridge pier, a pier net.
Yeah.
And what the difference between that is, it's not on a handle, it's on a rope. It's got a 3-point hitch, and you can lower it down in the water, whether you're 40 feet up or whether you're, you know, 5 feet off the water. Yeah. You can lower it down in the water. The trick to that is always coming up with a way of carrying it with me.
Yeah.
And what I recommend you do is, if you have one of those soft tackle boxes or something like that, they always come with a shoulder strap that I never use.
Mm-hmm.
But it works great for putting through both loops of the bridge net, clip them together, and through that and the rope, and then just put it over your shoulder or, you know, over your neck and just hang it off your back like a backpack.
There you go.
And you can use the shoulder strap from almost any luggage, or, you know, if your wife's got a purse with a big shoulder strap she doesn't use, or the tackle bags. Utilize those, excuse me, those shoulder straps to make a shoulder harness for your bridge net. And that way, you know, and you've got to be able to take it off and unhook it with one hand, because your other hand is still holding that fish on the rod. Once the fight's over, he's just kind of hanging out there, keep his head out of the water for just a minute or so, and that way he'll slow way down. It's not going to hurt him. Put his head back in the water, and then take your bridge net off, unhook your straps, you can drop it right in the water, land your fish. Now, when I go to put them back in the water, I like to tie the bottom loop to the top loop, so it's kind of a flat surface. Lay him on there, drop him in, he can swim right off.
Yeah, and I've actually got a snap swivel attached to mine that I just open up the snap and attach it to the netting.
Yeah, we have these little metal things that we can give you, shower curtain hooks.
Shower curtain rings, yeah.
Yeah, and you can use that to hold the ring to the upper ring to make it flat so it's not bellied out. And, you know, a lot of things you can do to make this more comfortable for the fish on the release.
Yeah.
Let's see. Getting back into more wear, Anger Pier has them, the Boquilla Pier, any pier off of Sanibel, all the docks down there loaded up. Almost all the bridges right now have snook on them.
Yeah.
There's so many different places to go snook fishing. It's unbelievable.
I think that's why it's such a popular fish, because it can be targeted so well from both boat and for shorebound anglers.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't need any special equipment.
No.
Now, people say, well, you got to do this at night. And that's not really true. But what it at night, snook fishing, what it is things are quieter.
Yeah.
And snook have hundreds of eardrums down both sides of their body. The black lines going down the side of a snook, the lateral lines, every scale that touches that black line has an oil sac connecting that scale to the body, the skin of the fish, acting as all individual eardrums so they can target stuff. If you're speaking of bridge where cars are going across, can you imagine the tremendous amount of noise that is for a fish with hundreds of eardrums?
Yeah.
So they're not going to bite very readily while the car traffic's going over. They're already overwhelmed by sound.
Yep.
And so once the car traffic dies, they can hear, they relax, and then they can hear a bait going through the water making that little bit of disturbance. Well, they're never going to hear it during the day.
No.
Now, they might smell it, but they're not going to be able to really key in on it with their sonar sensors hearing perception. So that's going to make it more difficult. Now, the other thing about fishing at night is there's usually very little, if any, car traffic. So that makes everything quieter if you're doing a bridge. The other thing is it does eliminate one other key sense. And they have eyesight like an eagle. They can see really, really well. Very, very keen eyesight. So they much more likely to see a leader, a knot, the hook displaced. All these little things, if they're not just right on the money, could keep that fish from hitting it, make it nervous. But once it's dark out, that eliminates one third of their sensory arsenal.
Yeah.
It's dark. They don't see. They got to hear and smell, and they get close, they're going to see it. But they get to get close, and it's still obscured. So that eliminates, you know, 33% of their arsenal against you, sight. Now, the smell part about it, like I said, you got to get the human scent off.
Yeah.
Big, big thing, because, again, snook, hundreds of eardrums, a sense of smell that would make a bloodhound blush. I mean, they can really have a great sense of smell, and they got eyesight like a hawk. I mean, just amazing eyesight. So any little bit you can do to even that up. That's why snook fishing is so much easier at night.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, one of the things I try and remind people too is your shadow on the water will stop a snook from biting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all their predators, not all of them, but a couple of their major predators come from above.
You know, ospreys eat them. When they're small, you got pelicans, herons.
Herons, egrets.
Egrets. They're
all the wading shorebirds, basically, were trying to kill them when they were small. So it's imprinted into their minds to always be aware of everything above them.
And you've got pelicans and seagulls and terns and all these.
And humans.
And humans. And most of them all come from above, even us. Very few of us are underwater diving looking for them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, after all, it is illegal to do that with a snook. But everything comes from above. You ever notice how snook like to be under an overhead shelter? More so, you know, there might be two pilings on a dock, but that big board cover on the top, that really helps them. That makes them feel much more secure. It's eliminated any overhead threat.
Yes.
And bridges, private docks, fishing piers. The boards you walk on are their roof. It's your floor, but it's their roof.
Yeah.
And that's keeping all those overhead predators out. That's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, now, we were kind of going in through it, and is there... I think the one thing people don't realize is you have a very strong chance of, while you're doing these snook fishing techniques, of catching a redfish and or tarpon.
Yeah, and even sometimes some trout. I mean, I've seen some big trout caught at night off El Joe Bean with snook fishermen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, I guess. I wasn't thinking that. I was trying to go into big fish, more exciting stuff, but let's go to trout.
Well, no, I mean, just... Just in general.
Bring me down, Robert. No. That's okay. I'm thinking of, you know, 4-foot fish, well, big tarpon. Monster redfish. And we can do these trout. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but when it's a 27, 28-inch trout, that's a pretty good trout.
That's a very good
trout. I've never seen little trout caught there at night. I've always seen, I mean, the biggest trout I ever seen caught off there was 29 inches with a snook fisherman. You know, I've never seen anything under like 24 inches ever caught at night out there. So, you know, and of course the tarpon, I mean, I watched, well, Orville, I watched him hook on his Calcutta pole, probably about an 80 to 100 pound tarpon. He ended up getting two hernias from it because he did not want to let go of that Calcutta pole.
And I have had my, literally, black eyes. I've never lost a tooth over it, but I've had a couple of busted lips and one black eye because I got a big fish on a Calcutta pole. And what a Calcutta pole is, just quickly, because we talk about them, but we probably, a lot of you don't know what they are. And what a Calcutta pole is a bamboo pole. Now, that bamboo pole is, it's not, you can't go out in your yard, cut a bamboo pole. It will dry out, break, fall apart. In India, they cut these bamboo poles down. They dig a big hole. They put all the bamboo poles inside of this hole, then fill it full of elephant dung. And the elephant poopy, when they fill it all with that, they leave it in there for 6 months or longer. And the oils in that, you can do the same thing with linseed oil. Like take a long piece of PVC pipe, drop a bamboo rod in there, fill it with linseed oil, tongue oil, any of those oils, and leave it sit in there for at least 6 months. Then when you take it out, dry it off, let it sit dry, and that will cure it. Now, it makes it so tough. In a lot of countries up until very, very modern, just within the last 10 or 15 years, they use it for rebar and concrete.
Yeah.
In the Far East, India, the Orient, all over, and even in the Middle East, they were actually using bamboo Calcutta poles treated as rebar and concrete. It's very, very strong. But it allows it to bend and go up. And if you have one for a while, it's a good idea every year or so to take a paintbrush and paint on some linseed oil lightly or any of the wood oils to help keep it flexible. Then you take some rope, quarter-inch line rope, and you wrap the handle, and then you make wraps all the way down to the end of the rod, and you put a swivel off and tie your bait off of that. But it's literally a treated bamboo pole, and that's what we use for snook fishing. But we're literally kind of right down to the wire here, Robert. Any last thoughts? You get about 30 seconds.
No, I would say just be safe and have a good time. Enjoy snook season while it's here. You got another month and a half to go.
Yeah, we got a while to go in snook season. Fishing Frank here in the chair. That's Robert in the chair across from me. Kind of a generalized top five today. We've got the tent sale coming up. Check fishingfranks.com. FishinFranks. No G in Southern Fishing. Fishingfranks.com. Check out what's going on with the all the different stuff, fishing reports and everything else. So I guess that's about it. Thank you, boys and girls, for listening, and say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind. You know, some folks say that fishing on a Sunday's a sin. I don't believe in that though. If a fish bite my line on a Sunday morning, really morning, I believe I'll take him on home and fry him up good and have a ball. 'Cause I don't see nothing wrong with fishing on Sunday at all. I'm going fish, 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 fish. Yes, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind. All right. Time here tonight. Yes, sir.
boy next door to come over and play his fiddle for us. Send old Charlie Daniels out for a couple of bottles of corn liquor there, will you?